after having another fire and fury top moment where President Trump on Saturday destroy Iran, and they gave him a 48-hour ultimatum, an absolute ironclad, certain well, not anymore. As it turns out, that deadline was about as firm as Jell-O, and now President Trump has unilaterally changed it. Now, as we try to figure out where is this going now, what are the Iranians saying? What are some of President Trump's allies saying? And where can we think that this war is going to go now? Is it going to come to an end, or are we going to continue on with some of the same difficulties that we had before with this seemingly unending war here? I think you know probably where this is going to go. First of all, for those who may have missed it, this was at 7:23 this morning. President Trump said he is pleased to report that the United States of America and the country of Iran have had over the last 2 days very good and productive conversations regarding a complete and total resolution of our hostilities in the Middle East. That's key right there. Not just that we're going to get the strait open, but he says a complete and total resolution of the hostilities in the Middle East. Based on the tenor and tone of those in-depth, detailed, and constructive conversations, remember also the tone and in-depth, that's something that he said he liked. They'll continue through the week, and I've instructed the Department of War to postpone any and all strikes against the Iranian regime. So President Trump is saying, listen, because of these good conversations that we've had, and I like the tenor and the tone, I like what they're saying, we're going to postpone this. So it's not going to be tonight. Remember, that clock would have expired at 7:45 p.m. Eastern Standard Time tonight, and then apparently all kinds of bad things were going to happen. Well, this morning, President Trump, first of all, he posted that through social, and then when he was getting ready to get on board Air Force One, of course, the press was out there waiting, and he did not disappoint and had plenty to say.
Ministry says you're not telling the truth when it comes to productive conversations to end the war.
Well, they're going to have to get themselves better public relations people. We have had very, very strong talks. We'll see where they lead. We have major points of agreement. I would say almost all points of agreement. Perhaps that hasn't been conveyed. The communication, as you know, has been blown to pieces. They're unable to talk to each other. But we've had very strong talks. Mr. Witkoff and Mr. Kushner had them. They went, I would say, perfectly. I would say that if they carry through with that, it'll end that problem, that conflict. And I think it'll end it very, very substantially.
So that a little odd there. First of all, he says we have basically agreement on all points. So we have verbally, we're nearly there. So remember just days ago, he said that the war was nearly there, that they are all but decimated and everything has been destroyed. We're wrapping this up. It's almost going to be done soon, militarily. Days ago. Now then, this morning, Monday morning, now we're almost there diplomatically. Everything has basically been agreed to. And then he started out talking about who he was talking with. And he said, well, now we had Jared Kushner and Steve Witkoff. They were talking to them, like the tenor and the tone. But then you start to find out, okay, some things are not already adding up. I mean, already, even this first part here. You say that they're agreeing to almost everything. And then you talked about the senior supreme leader, which he has more to say in just a second. But you say, at least the people we're talking to. Well, now, who are you talking to? Is someone talking for the regime? Is this somebody that you're just having a chat with that maybe does, maybe doesn't have the authority to make any kinds of negotiations? I mean, one would certainly want to understand that. But you have to also ask the obvious questions. Now, why would the Iranian side be willing to come to agreement on almost all these things when they just did as of the 26th and the 27th of February prior to this? They had already agreed to nearly everything that you wanted, and they put other things that hadn't been agreed to on the table, which here to that point was off the table. They weren't even talking about their support to regime, for proxies in the regime, or to the long-range missiles. Those weren't even on the table until the 26th of February with Jared Kushner, with Steve Witkoff, with Abbas Araghchi, the foreign minister from Iran. Those people were all there, and they were all those things were on the table then. One would wonder, why would Iran have agreed to it then? Then comes the war, and then they say they're not going to talk about anything except now the conditions have changed for Iran. They say we're still willing to talk negotiations, but now then it's going to be basically surrender by the United States. You're going to pay us reparations. You're going to withdraw from the region, not even just in one or two bases, and there's going to be security guarantees for us. That's what we're willing to talk about now. Now, how we get from what Abbas Araghchi said, and he said that just a couple of days ago publicly, to now this one over the weekend, is not explained. Now, you may say, well, that's because of the threat. That's because of the ultimatum. But instead of any kind of capitulation, here is how IRGC spokesman, how he responded to that ultimatum.
If U.S. threats regarding Iran's power plants are carried out, the following punitive measures will be implemented immediately. The Strait of Hormuz will be completely closed and will remain closed until our damaged power plants are restored. All power plants, as well as the energy and information and communications technology infrastructure of the Zionist regime, will be extensively targeted. All similar companies in the region that have American shareholders will be completely destroyed.
So that doesn't sound like somebody who's like whose tone and tenor you may want to like that. You know, that's during the period of time where Trump says where there's been negotiations. Let's see if I have that one still handy. Yeah, you have an Iranian member of parliament today since Trump has made this announcement that says because the United States realized Iran had entered an existential conflict and would definitely act on the threats you just heard, it cowardly backed down. Now, if you actually are having negotiations behind the scenes and all major points have been agreed to, then you would either expect silence from the Iranian side or overt acknowledgement of that. Said, yes, I think we are actually close to this. We are coming close to making a deal that's going to be satisfying everybody, or at least that we can live with, something like that. But what you wouldn't expect is for the IRGC leader to still defiantly say, if you act on it, we are going to have a crushing response and no one's going to like it. And then a member of parliament, a member of their government, calling you a coward, basically reemphasizing they are not giving up on any of their terms. So we already have a pretty big disconnect. President Trump was also there at that same interview, was asked, you know, what is it about, who is it we're talking with anyway, and what is this current status on the supreme leader?
A top person. Don't forget, we've wiped out the leadership phase one, phase two, and largely phase three. But we're dealing with the man who I believe is the most respected and the leader. You know, it's a little tough. We've wiped out everybody.
Is that the supreme leader?
No, not the supreme leader.
So
we don't. Well, nobody heard of the second supreme leader, the son.
Are these direct?
Nobody. We have not heard from the son. Every once in a while, you'll see a statement made, but we haven't. We don't know if he's living. But the people that seem to be running it, and they seem that based on really fact, because things they've said have taken place.
Mr. President, I know you've deployed.
I don't want him to be killed. Okay? I don't want him to be killed.
Mr. President, you've deployed.
Nobody wants to be that. Nobody wants that job right now, you know?
Okay, well, that's just a little odd, you know, to be saying, well, we don't want the supreme leader to be killed. I'm just looking out for his good interest, even though we assassinated his predecessor and we brag about executing people, leaders across the board, military, political, civilian. It seems a little odd with that. I showed you last week, the Israeli side said basically they're on unrestricted warfare, and they're just going to target assassinate everybody, to include Mujtaba Khamenei, the current designated supreme leader. So unless there's a real big disconnect between the United States and Israel, what a shock that would be, who can say? But one of the interesting things he also said there, I want to point out, is that when he was explaining where this came from, he said, by the way, I don't want everybody to know, this wasn't me. It's not like I'm reaching out to them. They called me.
I think this is something that's going to happen. And why wouldn't it happen? So tomorrow morning, sometime their time, we were expected to blow up their largest electric generating plants that cost over $10 billion to build. It's a very good one. There was no dearth of money. And one shot, it's gone. It collapses. Why would they want that? So they called. I didn't call. They called. They want to make a deal. And we are very willing to make a deal. It's got to be a good deal. And it's got to be no more wars, no more nuclear weapons. They're not going to have nuclear weapons anymore. They're agreeing to that. Any of that stuff, there's no deal.
Now, this, of course, it just has to undercut anybody's hope this is going to result in anything other than a temporary drop in the price of oil, which it did immediately. There was a significant drop, like a $10 drop, the minute that President Trump said this from where it was, because it was eking up ahead, been a little bit over $100, and it dropped down by like $10 below that. It's since gone up a little bit. But when he says, look, it's got to be a good deal. We need to have, it's got to be no nuclear weapons, no long-range missiles, no support for the regional proxies, et cetera. Those were all on the table, and many of them had already been delivered into his hand on the 26th of February. And if he already had that deal in his hand, why does he think, and upon what basis would he propose that if he gets it again, this time he would accept it? And even more to the point, why would the Iranian side be willing to do that? Now, one of the obvious questions people would ask is, you know, you've blown up a lot of stuff here, and, you know, you've even hit some of the nuclear energy facilities again. So on the one hand, you claim that they were obliterated. An interesting combination of things. President Trump has long said that all of their nuclear weapons capable facilities had been obliterated in June 2025. In Senate testimony last week, Director of National Intelligence Tulsi Gabbard confirmed that that is the case, according to the intelligence assessment. And she also confirmed that there had been no effort whatsoever to resuscitate any of those things. But as was discussed a lot, there is this issue of this 400 some odd kilograms of reprocessed material, nuclear material at 60% refinement. So the question then is, okay, well, you kind of claim that, you directly claim that, especially Steve Witkoff, Lindsey Graham, both emphatically claimed that it was the presence of that material that is one of the imminent threat that Trump cited why he had to go in on the 28th of February. He couldn't wait anymore. It was a week away. So the question is going to be, okay, you can negotiate a lot of stuff, but what are you going to do about the pesky material?
You said you want to get the enriched uranium. How are you going to get the enriched uranium? Are you going to
It's very easy. If we have a deal with them, we're going down and we'll take it ourselves.
Oh, okay. Well, it's easy. I didn't realize that. I didn't know that it would be easy. I didn't know that would be something they would so easily just hand over and sure, take it and go along with it. Now, that's just moments ago, just not long before we came on the air here. President Trump made those comments. And so one of the most thorniest issue and the absolute central thing that they possession, one of their biggest, other than the Strait of Hormuz, the possession of that reprocessed material is one of the biggest leverages that Iran has. And so the idea that it's going to be easy and we'll just go take it should indicate that President Trump might not be keen on understanding just how desperately difficult and complex this situation is. Well, on this nuclear issue, one person who is not confused at all, not to say that he's knowledgeable or has a cogent position, but he's definitely not confused on what he thinks needs to happen on the nuclear program. And that was the day before all this. So this is yesterday. So before the announcement, here's what Lindsey Graham had to say about the nuclear program.
Under the regimes Democrats have been supporting and Republicans, they're not supposed to have any 60% enriched uranium. There's no commercial purpose for uranium enriched at that level. They just fired missiles that could get the Diego Garcia 4,000 kilometers. Everything to control this regime in terms of their missile program, their nuclear program has failed. So what has Trump done? He's obliterated their ability to make more missiles. He's obliterated their nuclear program, and he's going to take them out of the terrorist business. In about 3 or 4 weeks, maybe less, we'll be
what
in a situation.
What if it goes beyond that? I mean, the American people are nervous, and
even
supporters of President Trump have said this does not need to continue.
Well, I'm telling you, what needs to continue is to make sure that the larger state sponsor of terrorism can't get a nuclear weapon to blow us all up and hold us hostage.
So, some interesting things there. On the one hand, he uses the past tense phrase "obliterated" for the nuclear program and the long-range missile program. So, according to him, basically, the war's already won. Yeah, it might take 2 or 3 more weeks to kind of clean up a couple of pockets here, but the bottom line is we're on the way. They can't have a nuclear weapon. They can't have any capacity. They can't have regional allies, and they can't have a long-range missile program. Other than that, war's practically won. And then the Fox News host there raised a very important question, which I promise you almost certainly is the reason why Trump made this comment today. She says, what if it goes longer than that? What if it isn't two or three more weeks? What if it goes indefinitely? Because his base is not supporting this. They're already starting to go, yeah, why are we doing this again? And if it's inconsequential and you can't get it resolved and there's no end date involved and the casualties keep on coming up, however slow, if they keep on adding up, and then, of course, especially if that strait doesn't get up, get open. Now, President Trump made a comment this morning and we had that big drop, but I promise you that's also temporary. If this doesn't turn into anything, I don't even know if it's going to take 5 days. Who knows what it's going to be at the end of this day, because these things, these markets are notoriously volatile. So it could be even back up. But at for sure, at the end of that 5 days, if there's no deal, if the Iranian side hasn't capitulated, and if they continue on with their attacks against the West, the United States, Israel, and our regional allies, then that price is going to go back up, and his base is going to start asking harder questions, because he's already going to come under withering fire for this, this so-called capitulation here. They're saying, wait a minute, you promised that there would be a negotiated settlement or an opening of the Strait of Hormuz today, or you would bring down fire and fury, basically. And now all of a sudden, you didn't do that. And now then you've given yourself another 5 days. Well, at the end of that 5 days, if again, there's no fire and fury, there's no, you know, brimstone being hailed down from heaven and all this kind of stuff on the Iranian side, and there's no deal, and there's no opening the Strait of Hormuz, then his population is going to start asking harder questions. And you can count on people like Lindsey Graham are going to continue to push. People like Jack Keane are going to continue to push. Mike Pompeo, all kinds of folks are going to continue to push. And the Israeli side they're not slowing down at all. The last thing they want is negotiate a settlement now. No, they want Trump. They desperately wanted Trump to make good on this ultimatum and to hit them hard. Now, the Israelis know that the Iranians are going to retaliate, but it's very clear that they have already in their mental calculations said that's just the price of getting what we wanted to be done. It's definitely going to, we're going to take some hits, but that's just what, that's the price we have to pay. That's their mentality. It's very clear that they are consistent on that. Trump, on the other hand, is not that consistent, because it's not an existential issue for Trump. It's not something that he has decades of time, you know, this obsession with getting rid of. It's always been about ploy, about getting support from the Israeli side to get money, to get campaign contributions. Understand, Trump has been talking about this for a long time, never because he had a personal desire to see so, that he recognized some kind of threat, only because he saw that it animated a lot of the Israeli supporters in the United States who had lots of money, and he correctly valued and assessed that if he said those things, then they would support him. That's exactly what's happened. Well, of course, nobody gets anything for nothing. So all of those people, especially Miriam Adelson and several others of the Israeli lobby, who have given him hundreds of millions of dollars, are now saying, yeah, time to pay up for some of that. So they're not going to be satisfied for him to just walk away here now when it got bad for our economy. I promise you, they will not allow him to do that. One of the other things that Lindsey Graham said over the weekend is that he is, in his brilliant military mind, you may recall he was, I think in the Army Reserve, was a full colonel, if I'm not mistaken. I'm pretty sure that was his rank. As an attorney, so it's not like he was a ground fighter. He wasn't an infantryman who's, you know, been used to slogging through the dirt and understands how military affairs are done. And so he made an analogy here. He's advocating strongly that one of the things Trump can do to get that strait open is to take Karg Island.
Here's what I tell President Trump. Keep it up for a few more weeks. Take Karg Island, where all of the resources they have to produce oil. Control that island. Let this regime die on a vine.
Is this going to, though, take Karg Island? Is it going to involve U.S. troops on the ground? Let me just read you something from the Atlantic. Does an assessment on that. They say U.S. troops may well take Karg Island. We believe their ability to do so, but only to endure ballistic missile strikes, drone attacks, petrochemical smoke, all without a reliable means of obtaining logistical support. The result could be a grinding war of attrition. They talk about how far away they would be from resupply.
I'm sort of tired of all this armchair quarterback, and this has been an amazing military operation. God bless the fallen.
But it's a difference when we talk about troops on the ground.
I trust the Marines, not that guy. Mm-hmm. I trust DOD. We got two Marine expeditionary units sailing to this island. We did Iwo Jima. We can do this.
Oh, that was really painful for me to hear. He said, you know, we've done Iwo Jima. That's, you know, in the lore of American military history, not just from World War II in the Pacific, not even just the Marine Corps. That's one of their primary things that they, you know, take credit for, you know, part of their military history because of the profound difficulty that was. But they took that. It was an island, a Japanese-controlled island during World War II. And he's right. There are two Marine amphibious units, the USS Boxer led by and the USS Tripoli. Each has its own escort ships, et cetera. Each is able to have, you know, it's packed with F-35s that they can take off from that short run. You see that these are basically small aircraft carriers to go along with the Ford left. The Abraham Lincoln is still there, right? So this is now adding two additional ones with the ground component, with the capabilities of having forced landings, et cetera. You see it also has V-22 Ospreys, other kinds of helicopters on board. So that's what's steaming there right now. The Tripoli, it was scheduled to arrive today. We'll see if that actually took place, but that's the expectation. It's either there or literally just hours away from arriving on station. So it's at least in the window where it could potentially take action. The Boxer is probably another 2 weeks behind that, 10 days somewhere, depending on how fast that it continued to transit the area. So in any case, there is about to be a fairly decent size Marine force whose job it is and who is well trained for and equipped to actually take an island. That's one of their core constituencies. That's what they do. They are trained for that. Marine Corps 101 is one of the people we've had on the show have said recently. Now, that's one thing. But to say for Lindsey Graham to say, almost like Trump said in one of those earlier soundbites about getting the nuclear material, it would be easy. We did Iwo Jima. We can do here. He said, I don't want to listen to that guy, whoever it is you were talking about from the Atlantic, talking about the difficulties of taking Karg. I mean, that could have been us. They could have really quoted from our previous shows where we had told you the difficulties. But let's take a look at that. He said, well, we did Iwo Jima. We can do this. First of all, let's take a look here. This was the Battle of Iwo Jima. Number one, we had 70,000 U.S. Marines taken on 18,000 Japanese soldiers. That took part in the battle. In 36 days of fighting, nearly 7,000 Marines were killed and another 20,000 were wounded. So as best I can count, that we have about 5,000 Marines who are being talked about taking on this place. Now, how many people are Iranian defenders are on Karg Island? It's probably not 18,000. We actually don't know the population, the civilian population, because there's workers on there, oil field workers and other civilians, was about 10,000. How many military are there is anybody's guess. I haven't seen any assessments on that, but there are some. President Trump attacked it, the military sites, a few days ago and claimed he obliterated them. Unfortunately for him, CENTCOM showed the videos and it was literally a few pinprick drops. So there were some things that were blown up, but nothing was obliterated. So don't believe any of that. And of course, ever since that time, had the Iranians desired to do so, they could have reinforced it. So everything that was lost could have been replaced, and they may have even sent more troops over. We don't have any visibility on that, but the expectation is that's what they would have done. But then let's look at the things that even more matter. Here's a map of the Battle of Iwo Jima, and you see it is 721 miles from Iwo Jima to Tokyo. So you see that this was in 26 March 1945 that the U.S. finally won the Battle of Iwo Jima, and you saw the number of casualties that were on that we suffered to get that. The Japanese had virtually all of their 18,000 were either killed, wounded, or captured, so they completely lost that. 36 days of intense fighting, and as you may know, there was an enormous escort ships around there. The U.S. had tremendous air power and naval power basically surrounding the island because at that point in the war, the Japanese Navy had been all but destroyed. Also important to understand, there were no drones back then. There were no long-range ballistic missiles. It was, as you saw, 700 miles away from the mainland of Japan. This situation is that's let me just bring this up because it's always good to get the visualization here. This is actually this is the Iwo Jima right here. So that's just shows you the distance here, 721 miles to Tokyo, to the mainland. But then let's pull back out of that and let's run back over to our area. Yeah, if we can pull that up a little bit. Sorry about that. That's not the one. All right. You know what? I've messed that up and I'm going to just pull off it. Bottom line is, yeah, my map was messed up there. Bottom line is the Karg Island is in the Persian Gulf. It is just a matter of a handful of miles away from their shore, which means they're in range of all of their support, not 721 miles within almost visual range. I think you can actually see the shore from the Karg Island. And so that means artillery, even regular artillery, can range it. They have all kinds of classes of drone warfare, the Shahed 136s and on down, all kinds of additional drones that they have. Of course, they have numerous categories of ballistic missiles that can range it from anywhere on their territory. Virtually everything, short range, middle range, and long range missiles, everything can reach Karg Island. And why would we think that now then something so close and so easy for them to destroy, something that's so important to the Iranian side that puts it in range, are they not going to be able to get it? So when you say, yeah, we took Iwo Jima, Iwo Jima was totally isolated. We had every advantage you can imagine in the air and on the sea. There's nothing they could do. They couldn't attack our ships. They couldn't attack our planes. They were literal sitting ducks. And you're going to make the analogy from Iwo Jima to Karg Island, where every advantage in the world is for the defenders, and they have all the support that could even be imagined from their land within visual range of it. If this is the kind of expert advice that President Trump is getting, we are going to be in a world of hurt. President Trump himself has said that he made the decision to go to war not from his CIA director, not from Tulsi Gabbard, not from the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, not from the commander of Central Command. He used Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner, who notoriously have no military experience whatsoever and limited international experience as it relates to business. They know how to make money. That's their expertise that they have, and connections to the president, which is no small matter. But you're using them to make your decision to go to war. And now then you're listening to the likes of Lindsey Graham. You're listening to the likes of Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz over the weekend bragged about how I was the one that talked President Trump into this war. Did you see that? The infamous Ted Cruz, who's you know, that well-known military scholar who's so expertise with military matters. He's the one, according to him anyway, he's the one that helped push Trump over the edge to get to that. That's the level of people President Trump is listening to. So when you hear these comments now that we are, again, on the verge of a negotiated deal, when he threw in the trash the golden bowl opportunity that he had before this to avoid war and come out with a win, it's not even just that, folks, understand this. It's not even just that President Trump had a chance to have this negotiated before at the end. It would have been a huge diplomatic feather in his cap. I mean, because I had said prior to this, I said, I just don't think Iran is going to agree to these things. I don't think that they're going to put their proxies on the table. I don't think that they're going to put their long-range missiles on the table. Why would they? That would be foolish. And this whole thing about the nuclear material, I mean, that's been their one big axis of leverage over the United States. And yet, and the reprocessing that goes along with it. And yet, there they were. On the eve of the war, as we know now, we thought was just in the middle of negotiations. I don't know if anybody actually thought that, but nevertheless, we actually were in negotiations. Trump had everything. He could have stopped right there and said, you know what? Snap. That's fantastic. Who would have thought we could have gotten that? Let's go ahead and take this right now. And then you turn around. Remember, all this was focused on getting the price of oil down and looking at the midterms. He's got to get this stuff off the table so he has a chance to have a good outcome on the midterms. This would have gotten the war off the table. And then he could have continued to crow about what he did in Venezuela. And then he could have said, now that I've avoided war, one of the things he brags about a lot, I've avoided war, got this deal solved. No other president could do it better than Obama did it. Everything is great. It would be a genuine feather. I promise you, everybody in the Middle East, all of our allies in Europe would have all been singing his praise. They'd have had a big choir, probably got together, and they'd have been singing, probably wearing robes, the whole thing. Trump loves a big show. I bet they would have all done some version of that. And now here he goes back to his constituents, and he can actually focus on the midterms. And instead, he throws it in the trash. Now, why do we think that now, when he's gotten himself into this war with no obvious off-ramps, with an enemy that says, all right, you've gone to total war with us, we're going to have a very high demand now that has guarantees that are externally enforced for our future security going forward, which was not on the table before. Now it is. And if Trump's listening to people like Lindsey Graham, if he's listening to people like Ted Cruz, Witkoff, Jared Kushner, Ted Cruz, what hope do we have that he's going to come to any good outcome here? And if there's even a good one to find, and right now I have grave doubts that there's going to be any kind of a deal in between now and the next 5 days, that for any reason, I still am pretty convinced that Iran is not going to give in because of a pain of a few weeks. Listen, they fought 8 years of war. They have endured all kinds of privation from the attacks from the Israeli side already, 2024, 2025, now 2026. They're not just going to buckle because of 3.5 or 4 weeks of significant pain. It's not minor, but it's also short duration. There's no reason to think they're going to give in here. So we are still in a real difficult situation here. Now, I want, if it's the problem with Trump, who he's listening to is a problem, obviously the issue also is with Trump himself. Now, just to kind of to put things in context here, kind of in closing, I want to show you something that President Trump said from in front of the White House last Friday. And then I'm going to show you something he said in 2020. And unfortunately, you're going to see some significant similarities between this. Here he is on Friday talking about how war is all but won.
Oh, I think we've won. We've knocked out their Navy, their Air Force. We've knocked out their anti-aircraft. We've knocked out everything. We're roaming free. From a military standpoint, all they're doing is clogging up the strait. But from a military standpoint, they're finished.
So how much longer?
They're finished, he said. Now, imagine just on that one clip by itself. If they're all but finished, if you've cleaned them up, why would you even need it to issue an ultimatum? Just clogging up the Strait of Hormuz. You remember also around that same time, he put out another Truth Social where he says, that ain't our job, man. That's not our deal. That's Europeans can figure that out. They need that open. We don't. So I don't have to worry about that, right? And then, of course, this radical shift where he turns around then and says, okay, 48-hour ultimatum. All these things are going to happen. Well, before you listen and take at face value anything else he says like that one from Friday, remember this one he said about the first 1 month of the working on the COVID-19 situation from 2020. Here he is trying to reassure everybody how this is basically already won.
Ultimately, the goal is to ease the guidelines and open things up to very large sections of our country as we near the end of our historic battle with the invisible enemy. We're going for a while, but we win. We win. I said earlier today that I hope we can do this by Easter. I think that would be a great thing for our country, and we're all working very hard to make that a reality.
So you see, that was late March in 2020, and he said, we're definitely going to win this battle against COVID-19. In fact, we'll probably be open up by Easter. You remember that? He was really famous at the beginning for saying, yeah, we'd have this wrapped up here. You see the mentality he's always had. He sees difficult times, and he just wants to reassure you everything's fine. We're winning. It's going on. And yet we know that there were millions of people that were still to die when he made that statement. And all kinds of damage that happened then. We did not get it under control for quite a long time. There was no evidence at the time that it was about over. In fact, every evidence was it was just starting. It was about to go up. I'm not going to get into where COVID-19 came from or any of that kind of stuff. That's all interesting things and useful things to discuss. But the point being that here is that the evidence was that it was just starting. And yet he's just telling you what he wants to be true. I want it to be over. I want it to be finished by Easter, just a couple of weeks hence. And it obviously wasn't. In fact, it hadn't even gotten to anywhere near to its worst point yet. It was still going much worse. But that's what he says. He says he claims things because he wants you to believe them. That's the same thing we see here. There is no evidence at all that this is about, that it was over on Friday, or that there's going to be some resolution on 5 days from now, which he's basically extended his ultimatum. The fundamentals simply aren't there. And I've shown you just some of the evidences here by what we saw from the Iranian foreign minister, and even what Fox News was reporting earlier today, that the Iranian government says, we have not been talking to the United States. We certainly didn't beg them for a deal. And in fact, it's a cowardly walk down, according to the member of parliament. Those are the realities here. Now, this afternoon, we're going to have at 3 p.m., we're going to have Professor Morandi back on the show. Man, the timing couldn't be better to have him on the show, because we will now, he's very tightly connected with members of the Iranian government. So in between now and then, he certainly will be tracking all what's happening behind the scenes here. And he will be able to tell us authoritatively if there are any negotiations that have been taking place, what could be happening next. Who's going to know? He's going to know. So we're going to find out this afternoon what the real score is from the Iranian side. And we'll match up what President Trump has said with what he's going to report that the Iranian side is saying. We'll see, are we close to a deal or not? Have there been any talks or not? We will get pretty conclusive proof from Tehran live this afternoon at 3 p.m. Do not miss that show. Appreciate you guys, folks. We will stay on top of all this. If anything breaks in between now and then, check back here. Otherwise, we'll see you at 3 o'clock on the Daniel Davis Deep Dive. You know we don't have sponsors because we hate to hit you over the head with ads. I don't like them. So show a little love back. Subscribe, like, and send this to somebody you care about.